Good day to you. This is Kathy Boughton, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am going to be reading from The Week, and we'll start off with the main stories and how they were covered. Suspect and CEO murder raged against parasites. The suspect charged with the murder of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson appeared in a Pennsylvania court this week and vowed to fight extradition to New York as investigators there tried to determine why the well-liked Ivy League graduate allegedly turned into a killer. Luigi Mangione, 26, was arrested at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania, 5 days after Thompson, 50, was shot dead by a masked assailant in Midtown Manhattan. The killer wrote, "Deny, defend, and depose" on shell casings left at the crime scene, suggesting the assassination was linked to health insurance claims, and fled the city. Police who arrested Mangione said they found a 3D printed gun in his backpack, along with a silencer, several fake IDs, and a 262-word handwritten manifesto in which he appeared to admit to murdering the health insurance boss and wrote, "These parasites had it coming." As police escorted Mangione to his first extradition hearing, he shouted, "Completely unjust," an outburst that fed his burgeoning image as a folk hero to some Americans resentful of the insurance industry. Those who knew Mangione, scion of a wealthy Maryland family, were shocked by his arrest. He graduated valedictorian from an exclusive Baltimore prep school and studied computer science at the University of Pennsylvania. Friends said he changed after having spinal surgery for back pain in 2023. He became increasingly isolated and was reported missing by his family weeks before the murder. "I can make zero sense of it," said R.J. Martin, who lived with Mangione in Hawaii a few years ago. "Why would this promising young man shoot dead a total stranger?" asked the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. Suffering and lonely, he may have gone down internet rabbit holes and picked up the populist theme of blaming seemingly distant and faceless corporations for social ills. But Mangione's internet habits don't reveal much, said John Herman at New York Magazine. Yes, he praised the Unabomber's manifesto on a book review site, but he also posted about AI superintelligence and followed some anti-woke pundits. His online trail is just like that of millions of other young men in his social milieu. "Investigators are eager to discover how Mangione got his weapon," said Maren Corgan at Fox. "This may be the first high-profile murder committed with a 3D-printed ghost gun. These increasingly common firearms have no serial numbers, making them untraceable. In Mangione's case, the police, assuming they have the right suspect, got lucky. If there had been no gun in his backpack, they likely never would have found it." "Everything about Mangione is a mystery," said Scott Nover in Business Insider. "That makes it easy to turn him into something he's not, like a crusader for universal health care. All we really know is Mangione is a troubled Gen Zer who won the privilege lottery at birth and subscribed to a mishmash of interests and beliefs. We'll learn more about him in what will be a dramatic trial. But it will be hard, if not impossible, to let go of our initial assumptions." GOP senators fall in line behind Trump picks. Momentum built behind some of President-elect Donald Trump's most controversial cabinet nominees this week, as embattled defense pick Pete Hegseth showed new life and top Republicans backed Trump's plan to install loyalist Kash Patel at the FBI. Hegseth's prospects looked shaky last week amid allegations of sexual assault, heavy drinking, and mismanagement of two veterans groups. But this week brought a shift, aided by a turnabout from Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. Previously cool to Hegseth, the combat veteran said that she would support the Fox commentator, who reversed his prior opposition to women in combat roles, through this process. Ernst's switch followed a pressure campaign from MAGA World. "Pete Hegseth will be just fine if you sabotage his deserved spot," conservative podcaster Don Bongiorno told Ernst. You, however, will not be fine. FBI Director Christopher Wray announced he would leave at the end of President Biden's term, potentially smoothing the way for Patel. Trump's one-time National Security Director, John Bolton, warned that as FBI Director, Patel would be an apparatchik interested only in proving his fealty to Trump. But on Capitol Hill, Patel drew support, with Ernst saying that he would create much-needed transparency at the FBI. Nearly 100 former U.S. diplomats and intelligence officials signaled alarm about Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's pick for Director of National Intelligence. But Trump's allies expressed confidence in his picks would all prevail. They're all going to get confirmed, said Senator Rick Scott. The columnist said, the MAGA gloves are coming off, said Rachel Bade and Eugene Daniels in Politico. After the flameout of Trump Attorney General pick Matt Gaetz, the president-elect and his allies have shifted toward a confrontational approach, teaming with outside forces to try to grind senators into submission. The campaign against Ernst, which included social media trolling and circulating stories about her divorce records, was meant to send a message, and it seems to have succeeded. Gabbard has some explaining to do, said Chris Brennan in USA Today. The deposing of Syrian strongman Bashar al-Assad brings to mind Gabbard's two secret meetings with Assad in 2017 and her proclaimed skepticism that he'd used chemical weapons against his own people. Meanwhile, the Russian state media outlet RT is promoting Gabbard's nomination, and three former Gabbard aides told ABC News she was a devout watcher of RT who eagerly shared Russian propaganda. Trump's choice of Gabbard and the woefully unfit Hegseth epitomizes how the next Trump presidency will differ from the first, said A.B. Stoddard in The Bulwark. No longer are there even passing nods to substance or credentials in the battle for raw power. The appalling shortcomings of picks like Hegseth or Patel mean nothing to Trump, who prizes only loyalty. But for America's enemies, this is like Christmas morning. Installed in key positions, these stooges will weaken, isolate, and divide us. Looking at the controversy of the week, health insurance, a CEO's murder, and an explosion of rage. Elizabeth Austin understands why so many Americans reacted with glee following the murder of UnitedHealthcare CEO last week, said Robin Abkarian in the Los Angeles Times. A single mother in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, Austin battled the health insurance giant after her young daughter, Carolyn, was diagnosed with leukemia during the pandemic. UHC first refused to pay for a feeding tube Carolyn needed to stay alive while struggling with the nausea of chemotherapy, forcing Austin to pay $900 a month out of pocket for the device. Then it denied payment for a sedative Carolyn needed during lumbar punctures. Carolyn is healthy now, but Austin is still scarred by the experience. She said she was saddened but not shocked by the shooting of UHC boss Brian Thompson and by the fact that his death was widely mocked on social media. UHC disabled comments on its statement about the murder after 124,000 users reacted to the post with a laughing face emoji. These things are happening because people are really struggling, said Austin. That's no excuse for this grotesque reaction, said Ingrid Jacques in USA Today. Thompson, 50, was a husband and father, yet people posted online that sympathy for his family was out of network or required prior authorization. Such a shortage of humanity is alarming to witness. Spare me the pearl clutching, said Arwa Madawi in The Guardian. Murdering anyone is quite clearly wrong, but Thompson earned $10.2 million a year from a company notorious for getting its customers to pay enormous premiums, then denying one in three claims, a denial rate roughly double the industry average. He may have been a great father and husband, but he was also the face of an unfair system that has screwed millions of people over, setting them on the path toward bankruptcy, pain, and death through claim rejections. We don't yet know the motives of Thompson's killer, but the words left on shell casings at the scene, deny, defend, and depose, suggest the assassin shared many Americans' anger at a racket that is more focused on increasing profits than providing care. The reaction to Thompson's murder speaks to a sickness in our culture, said the Washington Post in an editorial, and to widespread ignorance of how insurance works. Health insurers don't nix claims just to line their pockets. Their industry's profits, in fact, are capped by law. Insurers deny some claims, often for expensive treatments of limited effectiveness, because those difficult trade-offs keep premiums affordable while maximizing value for their customer base as a whole. Insurance executives make popular villains, said Dylan Scott in Vox, but they're no more to blame for our broken system than our overpaid doctors, congressional gridlock, or the fact that Americans are simply living longer. The failure of American healthcare is a collective one, and it won't be fixed by finger-pointing, let alone assassinations. The divide between those celebrating Thompson's murder and those horrified by it feels less ideological and more class-based than our usual culture war spats, said Jonathan V. Last in The Bulwark, and that's worrying. Class-based societal conflicts, like the French Revolution, tend to occur at moments of yawning income inequality like our own, when previously settled questions about fairness and the rule of law feel suddenly up for grabs. Whether or not Thompson's murder ends up being one of those historical flashpoints, we are crossing into dangerous territory. Only in America. Health insurer Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield has scrapped plans to cover anesthesia for only a fixed number of minutes. Under the policy, claims for anesthesia that exceeded set time limits for surgeries would have been denied. Anthem said the change was intended to reduce overbilling. What did Anthem expect doctors to do, said Connecticut Attorney General William Tong, who opposed the plan? Wake patients up in the middle of surgery? A Texas elementary school faced outrage from parents after a teacher revoked bathroom privileges for an entire first grade class. The teacher at Bartlett Elementary was reportedly annoyed that the class had lost its physical restroom pass and punished students by banning all bathroom visits for an afternoon, resulting in numerous in-seat accidents. The school's principal called the incident not indicative of the safe and loving environment we foster at Bartlett Elementary. It was a good week for Manifest Destiny after President-elect Donald Trump posted on Truth Social that it was a pleasure to have dinner the other night with Governor Justin Trudeau of the great state of Canada. Trudeau is Canada's prime minister, and Canada has not yet been annexed by the U.S. It was a good week for willpower after a woman in Changsheng, China, won the first prize of $1,400 in a competition that required contestants to stay away from their smartphones for 8 hours without books or movies to distract them and without showing signs of anxiety. It was a good week for breathing space after Donald Trump named Kimberly Guilfoyle, the fiancée of his son Donald Jr., as his pick to be ambassador to Greece. The surprise appointment came just hours after the Daily Mail published photos of Don Jr. holding hands with his rumored new girlfriend, Florida socialite Bettina Anderson. It was a bad week for boldly going after a New York woman whose license plate used to be NCC-1701, also the number of Star Trek's USS Enterprise, complained that she is drowning in traffic tickets racked up by the scofflaw Trekkies driving with novelty plates. I've run out of stamp, said Beta Corey, 76, of trying to answer every summons. It was a bad week for priorities after news that a power outage in Springfield, Tennessee, was caused by former Mayor Billy Paul Cornell crashing his vehicle into a utility pole while reaching for a breakfast sausage biscuit. Sources close to Cornell say that, before he knew it, the pole was in front of him. It was a bad week for Yuletide magic after visitors to a beloved Christmas display in the English city of Winchester complained of a sharp drop-off in quality from recent years. Among other gripes, the actor portraying Santa allegedly has a blatantly fake beard, a cheap red suit, and is not very jovial. And in other news, Biden scrambles to send aid to Ukraine before term ends. The Treasury Department this week announced it would send Ukraine $20 billion, its share of a $50 billion multinational loan, before President Biden leaves office. The Biden administration also approved a $266 million sales package to help Ukraine with the operation and maintenance of its F-16 fighter jets. The prospect of a second Trump presidency has thrown future U.S. aid for Ukraine into question and led the Biden administration to push every available dollar toward Kyiv to help it fight the nearly three-year-old Russian invasion. Since Trump's election win last month, Biden has announced more than $2 billion in extra aid for Ukraine and eased limits on Ukraine using longer-range U.S.-supplied missiles against targets inside Russia. Trump insisted this week that Russia and Ukraine should reach an immediate ceasefire and said Ukraine will possibly receive less U.S. aid when he takes office. Looking at the U.S. at a glance from Malibu, California, wildfires. As a wildfire ripped through Malibu this week, thousands of residents were told to flee their homes. The Franklin Fire spanned more than 3,890 acres, crossing the Pacific Coast Highway and threatening residents in central and eastern Malibu, along one of the world's most expensive coastlines. About 18,000 people live in mandatory or voluntary evacuation zones. High winds and low humidity made the fire difficult to contain, and more than 1,500 firefighters battled the blaze. Southern California Edison cut power for 46,000 customers to curb the risk of extra blazes. Pepperdine University enforced a shelter-in-place protocol, leaving about 3,000 people stuck on its Malibu campus as flames roared outside their windows. Malibu is known for fast-spreading wildfires, and Los Angeles County has gotten under a quarter of an inch of rain since October 1st. Fire season is not a season, said Governor Gavin Newsom. It's year-round in the state of California. From Houston, satire loses. A judge this week blocked the sale of the website InfoWars to the satirical publication The Onion. The Onion won a bankruptcy auction for InfoWars last month, backed by the families of the 2012 Sandy Hook school shooting victims. In 2022, the 26 families won a $1.4 billion defamation suit against InfoWars founder Alex Jones, who spent years claiming that the shooting was a hoax and the victims' relatives were actors. Jones was forced to declare bankruptcy and sell off his media company. The Onion hoped to turn InfoWars into a site mocking the kinds of conspiracy theories that Jones trafficked in. But Judge Christopher M. Lopez ruled in Houston's federal bankruptcy court that the auction wasn't transparent and hadn't maximized value for Jones's creditors. Jones declared victory, but Chris Mattai, the family's attorney, said his clients remain resilient and determined as ever to hold Jones and his corrupt businesses accountable for the harm he has caused. From Florham Park, New Jersey, UFO hunt. A series of mysterious drones flying over New Jersey have baffled government officials since mid-November, leading the FBI to announce an investigation last week. There have also been reports of drones above Philadelphia and Staten Island in New York City. Drones over New Jersey reportedly prevented a medical helicopter from reaching a person injured in a car crash in November, and they were spotted above critical infrastructure including reservoirs and military installations in Florham Park. The Federal Aviation Administration imposed flight restrictions over President-elect Trump's New Jersey golf course and a military base in Morris County, where the Army confirmed 11 sightings of unauthorized drones. Governor Phil Murphy met with Homeland Security officials, but assured residents they weren't in danger. "Unfortunately, we don't have many answers," an FBI spokesperson said, "and we don't want to guess or hypothesize." From Washington, D.C., opening moves. President-elect Trump this week said that he would pardon January 6 rioters on his first day in office and threatened to prosecute and imprison members of the House January 6 committee that investigated his role in the failed attempt to overturn the 2020 election. "For what they did, honestly, they should go to jail," he said on Meet the Press. During the interview, Trump also vowed to end birthright citizenship and to deport migrants with criminal records. But the president-elect also said he was open to bipartisan efforts to protect Dreamers, undocumented immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children, and signaled that he would not appoint a special counsel to investigate President Biden, which he previously promised to do. "I'm looking to make our country successful," Trump said. "Retribution will be through success." From New York City, acquitted. A jury this week acquitted a Marine veteran who choked a black homeless man to death on the subway last year in a trial that had become a test of attitudes about race, justice, and crime in the subways. Daniel Penny, 26, was charged with manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide for the death of Jordan Neely, a 30-year-old with a history of mental illness. Neely, who had been arrested 42 times, including 3 times for unprovoked assaults, acted erratically in a subway car, yelling at passengers, "I don't have food. I don't have a drink. I'm fed up. I don't mind going to jail and getting life in prison." A procession of witnesses testified that they were terrified of what Neely would do. Prosecutors argued that while Penny's impulse to subdue Neely was laudable, he crossed a line when he kept up his chokehold long enough to kill Neely. Jurors initially deadlocked on the manslaughter charge, then, after prosecutors agreed to drop that, acquitted on the charge of negligent homicide. From Washington, D.C., an FBI shakeup. FBI Director Christopher Wray announced this week that he would resign in January, depriving President-elect Trump of the ability to fire him. Trump has said that he wants to replace Wray with Kash Patel, a former federal prosecutor and public defender who is seen as a loyal MAGA enforcer. "This is the best way to avoid dragging the Bureau deeper into the fray," Wray told his 35,000 employees. Trump appointed Wray director in 2017, calling him a man of impeccable credentials. Wray is only 7 years into a 10-year term, a term length designated to shield the FBI from political interference. But he oversaw numerous investigations into Trump, including looking into 2020 election interference, searching Mar-a-Lago for classified documents, and examining ties between Trump's 2016 presidential campaign and Russian operatives. The Bureau also investigated President Biden and his son Hunter during Wray's tenure. "He invaded Mar-a-Lago," Trump said. "I'm very unhappy with the things he's done." Turning to the world at a glance, from Paris, Trump dishes on the royals. Donald Trump this week gushed about a great, great talk he had with Prince William in Paris at the recent reopening of Notre Dame Cathedral, restored after a devastating 2019 fire. Trump said the heir to the British throne updated him on the health of his wife, Princess Catherine, and father, King Charles III, both recently treated for cancer. "His father is fighting very hard," Trump told the New York Post. The comments drew attention in Britain, where the royal family has said little about the king's condition since he returned to limited public duties in April. Trump also complimented William, calling him a good-looking guy who was more handsome in person. "He looked really nice," Trump said, "and I told him that." From Mexico City, farm animals have rights. President Claudia Sheinbaum signed amendments last week that enshrine the rights of all animals in Mexico's constitution. The reform, which requires Congress to pass a comprehensive animal welfare law, is a victory for activists who spent years raising awareness about cruelty in the meat industry. While nearly all nations have some kind of law protecting animals, most of those laws exclude farm animals. Mexico's new reform, though, guarantees humane treatment to all, including cows, pigs, and chickens. Protecting animals and respecting their rights is essential for building a more just and kind society, said lawmaker Patricia Flores Elizondo. Critics said the reforms would do little to help the country's dogs and cats, 70% of which are homeless. From Vienna, kicking out the Syrians. Now that rebels have driven Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad into exile, Austria announced this week it would start deporting some of the 100,000 Syrian refugees it has been sheltering. Vienna made the announcement the day after the rebels seized Damascus. Other European countries, including Belgium, Italy, Germany, Greece, and the Netherlands, said they would halt processing of Syrians' asylum applications. Anti-immigrant, far-right parties have made gains in election after election in Europe this year, and governments have been looking for ways to stem the flood of asylum seekers, hoping to deprive the right of its biggest campaign issue. More than 4.5 million Syrians have fled to Europe since Assad cracked down on Arab Spring protests in 2011 and ignited a bloody civil war. In Oslo, no nukes. The Japanese atomic bomb survivors group, Nihon Hidankyo, accepted the Nobel Peace Prize this week for its nearly seven-decade campaign against nuclear weapons and for what the Nobel Committee called witness testimony that nuclear weapons must never be used again. Terumi Tanaka, who survived the bomb dropped on Nagasaki at the end of World War II, said it was more urgent than ever to remind the world of the charred bodies and other horrors he experienced because Russia has repeatedly threatened to use nuclear weapons since invading Ukraine in 2022. I am infinitely saddened and angered that the nuclear taboo threatens to be broken, said Tanaka, 92. The U.S. atomic bombings killed about 140,000 people in Hiroshima and 70,000 in Nagasaki. And we'll take a look at people. How Amos became an anti-rape activist. In 1994, Tori Amos was playing a concert in the Midwest when a young woman fainted in the audience, said Kira Cochran in The Guardian. The teenager passed out during the song Me and a Gun, about Amos's experience as a rape survivor, and was taken backstage. Amos checked on her after the show. She said, "Can I get a job, anything, so I don't have to go home, because my stepfather raped me last night, and he'll rape me tonight," says Amos, 61. I said naively, "Of course." But her management warned the singer and pianist that she'd be arrested for kidnapping if she took in the girl. I watched that girl walk out the door. The experience led Amos to become the first spokesperson for the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, which today operates a national hotline. But 30 years after that backstage encounter, Amos doesn't think the world has gotten any safer for women. Sure, services for rape victims have improved. On that 1994 night, there wasn't anywhere like RAINN to direct that young girl to, and that was the motivating factor, being so frustrated. Yet with Donald Trump's reelection, we're looking at an administration where misogyny is common practice. I just didn't think that women would have to face this again. A ballerina's pivot to homesteading influencer. Hannah Nealman's picture-perfect life as a Mormon farm wife has made her a social media phenomenon, said Julia Moskin in the New York Times. She lives on a 328-acre ranch in Utah with her husband, Daniel, son of JetBlue founder David Neeleman, and their 8 children, and is known to her 22 million online followers as Ballerina Farm. In her bucolic videos, Neeleman, 34, makes donuts, mozzarella, and almost everything her family eats from scratch, milks cows, and competes in beauty pageants, all while looking elegantly rustic. Some of her fans are a little too devoted. "People stand on the road and take pictures," says Neeleman. "They come up the driveway. They offer to live with us for a week to help with chores." Her online persona's name is a reference to Neeleman's love of ballet. She spent 4 years studying dance at Manhattan's prestigious Juilliard School. Some critics have claimed that Neeleman was forced to give up her dancing dreams by her husband. They were married and expecting their first child when she graduated Juilliard, and that she is a prisoner in a trad wife fantasy. But Neeleman, whose online store sells $67 bags of protein powder and $89 sourdough kits, insists that she is very much in control. "Ballet wasn't my life's goal. This is the life I always wanted." Eisenberg's epic anxiety. "Jesse Eisenberg recognizes the great irony of his childhood," said Olivia Ovenden in GQ. "His mother was a birthday party clown, and yet he was a profoundly unhappy, anxious kid. The actor missed a year of school because he was institutionalized with mental health issues. He couldn't understand why other children didn't share his worries. It was mystifying to me why we weren't all crying all day long, because it seemed like the world is so sad and scary," says Eisenberg, 41. He'd watch his happy-go-lucky peers and think, "How are they existing? Don't they know school is tomorrow as well?" At a young age, he embraced humor as a self-defense mechanism. Nobody laughs at the funny guy, and has since used comedy in the characters he plays, and in New Yorker humor pieces and a short story collection. He figured everyone else also used jokes to hide their inner turmoil until he met Ricky Gervais. "Are you depressed?" Eisenberg recalls asking the British comedian. "Is it that you hate yourself?" And he goes, "It's none of those things. I really love making jokes." "It's the first I ever heard that." He's still not sure Gervais was telling the truth, Eisenberg says, because his comedy is really tinged with a lot of sadness, so I didn't exactly believe him. In the news, we have Jay-Z this week, who's denied accusations that he raped an underage girl with Sean Diddy Combs more than 2 decades ago, saying the claims made in a lawsuit were part of an extortion attempt. The civil suit was initially filed against Combs in October, alleging the rap mogul and an unnamed celebrity took turns raping an unnamed 13-year-old girl at a New York City party in 2000. Combs, who is still awaiting jail on federal sex trafficking charges, denies any wrongdoing. This week, the anonymous plaintiff amended the suit to name Jay-Z as the other celebrity. The rapper called the claims heinous and said the attorney behind the suit, Tony Busby, had previously threatened to make the allegations public if he didn't agree to a settlement. Jay-Z lamented that he and his wife, Beyoncé, would now have to explain the cruelty and greed of people to their 3 children. Busby said Jay-Z's pleading speaks for itself. Saltburn star Larry Keegan deactivated his Instagram account last week, saying that he and his family had been subjected to inhumane trolling following his breakup with pop singer Sabrina Carpenter. After the couple's recent split, rumors circulated online that the Irish actor, 32, had cheated on the Espresso star, 25, with TikTok influencer Brecky Hill, rumors that Hill initially fed before saying that she'd never met Keegan. In a statement, the actor said he was quitting social media after facing a wave of lies, hatred, disgusting commentary about my appearance, character, and how I am as a parent. He said that people had been knocking on his grandmother's door and sitting outside the home where his ex, Allison Sandro, lives with their 2-year-old son, Brando. "That's crossing a line," said Keegan. Shailene Woodley says she fell into a deep depression after the end of her toxic relationship with NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers. In a recent interview with Outside Magazine, Woodley, 33, referenced a really awful traumatic thing she experienced in early 2022. That's about the same time her nearly two-year engagement with Rogers was called off. I felt like I lost my soul, myself, my happiness, she said, explaining that she had chosen to stay in a toxic situation out of empathy with someone else. It was, she said, the lowest low of my life. The Big Little Lies star added that she doesn't like to talk about her relationship with Rogers because it always makes me cry. It was not right, but it was beautiful. In the news, the resurgent anti-vax movement. Vaccines against childhood diseases are safe and effective. So why are fewer kids getting shots? How has the vaccine use changed? Before the COVID pandemic, the U.S. was a world leader in vaccination, with 95% of the population covered. Since 2020, though, uptake for all of the 15 federally recommended childhood vaccines has slumped by at least 2 percentage points, representing more than 70,000 children. In 10 states, exemptions from the vaccines required for public school enrollment now exceed 5%, the threshold for herd immunity against childhood diseases. And that means more kids are now getting sick. Cases of chickenpox, whooping cough, and pneumococcal disease are all up, and measles, which had been entirely eliminated in the U.S. in 2000, has come roaring back. More than a dozen measles outbreaks sickened hundreds of kids this year, concentrated in Minnesota, Illinois, Oregon, and Florida. If you asked me 40 years ago would I ever have to be defending vaccines like I do now, I'd say you're crazy, said pediatrician Peter Hotez of Baylor College of Medicine. Everybody knows the life-saving impact of vaccination. Why the drop in confidence? It's partly a result of families' concerns over COVID shots spreading to other vaccines. But the anti-vax movement started decades before the pandemic. In 1998, a little-known English gastroenterologist, Andrew Wakefield, published a study in The Lancet that linked the childhood measles, mumps, and rubella, MMR, vaccine with autism. Britain, which had recently mandated the MMR vaccine, was seeing a rapid rise in autism rates, with symptoms first appearing in toddlerhood, the age of vaccination. Concluding that the shot was responsible, Wakefield went on a media blitz in the UK and US, including an influential appearance on CBS's 60 Minutes. A few years later, Wakefield's research was thoroughly debunked. He'd studied just 12 kids, some of whom had developmental delays before they got the vaccine, and his work was funded by the very people who were suing vaccine companies. He was stripped of his medical license, but the damage had been done. Vaccine skepticism surged, and measles returned to Europe. Are vaccines actually risky? No. Over the past 30 years in America, vaccines have saved the lives of more than 1 million children and a lot of money, at least $540 billion in healthcare costs and trillions more in social costs. They don't cause autism. Scientists now believe that neurodivergence is 80% inherited, although factors such as advanced maternal age can also play a role. And adverse side effects, beyond a sore shoulder, are vanishingly rare. Fewer than 1,000th of 1% of people who get the Pfizer or Moderna COVID vaccine, for example, go on to develop the potentially fatal heart condition, myocarditis. COVID itself is 7 times more likely to cause it. Still, some people say they have been harmed by vaccines. Just minutes after getting her COVID shot in 2021, neuroscientist Michelle Zimmerman felt pain rush up her left side. She was later diagnosed with brain damage and can no longer work. She believes she got one of 60 million contaminated doses of the since-recalled Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The devastation of what this has done to my life, said Zimmerman, feels too hard to comprehend. How did COVID spur anti-vaxxers? Anti-vaccine groups seized upon rare cases like Zimmerman's, as well as anger over COVID vaccine mandates, to undermine confidence in all vaccines. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s anti-vaccine nonprofit, Children's Health Defense, more than quadrupled its donation intake between 2020 and 2021 to over $15 million. Another group, Informed Consent Action Network, doubled its staff. Misinformation from foreign actors online also fueled vaccine opposition. And pre-existing anti-vax communities found new recruits on Facebook and TikTok, targeting parents concerned about their kids missing school, as well as people angry over mask mandates. COVID vaccines have been the foot in the door for more than general anti-vaccine movement, said Dave Gorski, an oncologist at Wayne State University. And unfortunately, that door is open pretty wide now. How did the issue become partisan? The Republican Party embraced vaccine skepticism following the lead of Donald Trump, who repeated discredited claims on vaccines and autism during his first presidential campaign. That took this fringe issue and made it a political issue associated with the parties, said David Broyanatowski, an expert in online misinformation. In Republican-led states, hundreds of vaccine-related bills have been introduced since 2020. While only a few of them passed, the ones that did expanded vaccine exemptions for workers, students, and even visitors to hospitals and nursing homes. Support among Republicans for requiring children to receive the MMR shot to attend public school dropped from 79% in 2019 to 57% last year, while the share of Republicans who believe parents should be allowed to not vaccinate their kids more than doubled to 42%. What will Trump do in office? The president-elect has pledged to make America healthy again by putting Kennedy, who claims vaccines have caused more deaths than they've averted, in charge of Health and Human Services. There, he would have the power to staff the CDC's vaccine committee with anti-vaxxers or even dissolve it altogether. He could also pressure the CDC to stop recommending certain vaccines, which would eliminate insurance coverage for those shots. What could change is potentially the cost of vaccines, the access to vaccines, said former White House health advisor Tom Inglesby, and also confusion around public messaging about safety. On the news of Kennedy's nomination, vaccine company stocks took a nosedive. If Kennedy does what he said he will, said Lawrence Gostin, a professor of public health law at Georgetown University, he'll make America sick again. From the best columns, the U.S., Biden's Biggest Failure by Maureen Warren from The Dispatch. In his one term as president, Joe Biden was able to push through a progressive laundry list of big government legislation, said Michael Warren. But on his own terms, Biden's presidency has been an unmitigated disaster. The entire basis of Biden's run in 2020 was to keep Trump and Trumpism from returning to the Oval Office and to restore normalcy and decency to Washington. But as Biden's term limps to an end, he leaves as a highly unpopular and diminished figure, with Democrats staring at four more years of Trump and a generation of Republican politics shaped in his image. Indeed, an emboldened Trump will likely be more autocratic and bring more change and chaos than in his first term. Biden's failures were many. His botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, which badly damaged his credibility, his lack of urgency in addressing inflation and limiting the flood of asylum seekers crossing the border, and most of all, his decision to run for re-election when his advanced age and mental decline were all too apparent. In 2020, Biden said that Trump had failed to protect America and that this failure was unforgivable. Now that he's left America back in Trump's unsteady hands, will history say the same of Biden? Three Cheers for Doxing Neo-Nazis by Jonathan V. Last from The Bulwark. America is a tiny bit better off because four neo-Nazis were stripped of their online anonymity last week, said Jonathan V. Last. The Texas Observer recently published the names of four ex-users who ran anonymous accounts spreading pro-Nazi propaganda and white supremacy. Doxing, tracking down and revealing an anonymous poster's real name, usually carries negative connotations. But people should be responsible for what they say in public spaces. A person who wears a Nazi t-shirt on the street and shouts Heil Hitler will be ostracized, shunned, and likely fired, rightly so. Internet anonymity, however, allows people to avoid social stigma by leading dual lives. These extremists can be far more outrageous than someone posting under their real name, giving them an enormous advantage in the attention economy. This is toxic. Partly through the influence of Elon Musk's X, white supremacy has become far more mainstream than most people realize. Musk himself interacted with these Nazi accounts multiple times, while far-right Representative Thomas Massie, Republican from Kentucky, follows three of them. We need to reinforce robust codes of social stigma online and begin stripping the anonymity of idiots who are poisoning public discourse. Covering Up the Deaths of Women by Amanda Marcotte from The Salon. Abortion bans kill women, said Amanda Marcotte, but pro-lifers are trying to cover up that indisputable fact. After published reports that at least five women with doomed pregnancies have died in Texas and Georgia because doctors were afraid to treat them, officials in the two states decided to act. Georgia dismissed its maternal mortality board members for informing journalists about two of the 2022 deaths. Douglas's board, meanwhile, announced it would not be reviewing maternal deaths from 2022 and 2023, conveniently the first 2 years after the abortion ban went into place. These abortion bans contain theoretical exceptions for when a woman's life is at risk, but in practice, doctors are afraid to be charged with crimes. Pro-life activists now insist that if a pregnant woman is miscarrying, doctors should force her to have a C-section or induced labor. That can lead to uncontrolled bleeding and death. Christian right leaders like Ingrid Skop have proudly boasted that when women can't get abortions, promiscuous behavior declines. This is where these religious zealots' priorities really lie, in using forced birth to deter women from having sex, even if it kills them. It must be true. I read it in the tabloids. Keepers at Britain's only breeding colony for king penguins were surprised to learn that one of their two females is actually a gay male. Suspicions were raised about Maggie, who was acquired in 2016, after the bird engaged in mating behavior with a male penguin but failed to lay eggs. A feather sent for DNA testing revealed the bird, now called Magnus, is definitely a male, said a spokesman for Birdland Park and Gardens in Gloucestershire. The head keeper said the misgendering presents another unique hurdle in our efforts to establish a successful breeding program. A 59-year-old German man is attempting to set a world record by living in a submerged sea capsule for 4 months. Rüdiger Koch, an aerospace engineer, has spent more than 70 days in his 322-square-foot capsule, which is equipped with a TV, a computer with internet, a bed, and a stationary bike. Meals are sent down from a support team via a vertical tube. "I don't feel like I'm suffering down here at all," he said. He hopes to beat the 100-day record for living underwater. "The last time I checked, I'm still married," he said. A Catholic nun lauded for her volunteer work with prisoners was charged with serving as a go-between for a powerful Nyangeta organized crime clan and its jailed members. Sister Anna Donnelly, 57, carried orders, directives, moral and material aid to jailed mobsters and brought back information used to plan criminal strategies, prosecutors said. In a wiretapped phone call, a crime boss allegedly told a contact, "If you need something inside, she's one of ours." from the best international columns in South Korea, Democracy Revealed as Frighteningly Shaky. South Korea's democracy is hanging by a thread, said the Korea Herald in an editorial. President Yoon Suk-yeol's shock attempt to impose martial law 2 weeks ago failed, with the suspension of democracy lasting just 6 terrifying hours. Even so, the opposition Democratic Party was unable to impeach Yoon, despite its majority in the legislature, because his People Power Party denied a quorum by boycotting the vote. Of course, the political showdown is not over. Yoon could still be impeached any day, and meanwhile, he is facing investigation for treason and is barred from leaving the country. His defense minister, Kim Jong-un, has already been arrested and tried to kill himself in prison. For now, the PPP claims it is still in charge of government, saying Prime Minister Han Duck-soo will run things until Yoon is eventually removed. Yet that puts us in a lawless limbo. A prime ministerial takeover is not in the Constitution. Is Han now claiming to be commander-in-chief of the military? Who has the power to veto bills, Han or Yoon? The Korean people are in desperate need of an orderly end to the national chaos. Yoon's removal won't be enough, said Kyung Byeong. The PPP, the bulletproof ruling party, was implicated in this outrageous attempt at a power grab, and Koreans won't stand for it remaining in charge. Yoon claimed he had to act because the Democrats were too pro-North Korea and were blocking his programs. But that's how democracy works. There's an opposition that, yes, opposes the leader's agenda. And you could argue that the opposition has the stronger mandate, as Yoon was elected in 2022, while the Democrats won their legislative supermajority just this past April. At this point, the thousands of angry protesters in the streets are calling not merely for Yoon to be arrested, but also for the PPP to be disbanded. Hang on there, said Kim Hyung-ki in Sege. The Democrats don't exactly occupy the moral high ground. Their party leader was convicted just last month of violating election laws, and he could well be barred from office. The sad truth is that both the executive and legislature are politically corrupt. The people deserve better. This is a nightmare we thought we'd just put behind us in 1987, said Kang Jong-un in Korea Ginje Daily. That's when we shed years of military dictatorship to emerge as a democracy. Yet once again, we have now experienced tanks rumbling through Seoul. Armed soldiers march to the National Assembly, breaking windows to get in before lawmakers defiantly reversed the martial law decree. The sight of troops wrestling with civilians gave many of us flashbacks to the 1980 Wangju massacre, when hundreds of protesters were brutally gunned down. Yet while Yoon's folly has exposed the fragility in our democracy, said Kim Jong-min in Hangyong, the people's response shows its resilience. We must harness that energy to fix the problems that created this mess. That means reining in the imperial presidency and creating an institutional mechanism to prevent the governmental paralysis caused by the tyranny of the absolute majority opposition party. Let's turn this national embarrassment into a chance to rebuild our politics. From Canada, why are we killing our CEOs? John Semley, Toronto Star. Canada can only watch in horror as America treats the assassin of a health insurance executive as a modern folk hero, said John Semley. When United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson was killed last week on the streets of Manhattan, many Americans responded with a weird mix of gallows humor and more radical, sharpen the guillotine's menace. It seemed as if every family had a tale of an exorbitant medical bill denied, whether by that particular company or another. I know this firsthand because I moved to the U.S. a few years ago, and I, too, have encountered its Byzantine, baffling, and maddening healthcare system. As a Canadian raised on our national single-payer system, I'd never even taken my debit card to the doctor's office. I was blissfully unaware of stuff like medical copays, premiums, exclusions, and deductibles. And I'd never had to pore over a list of different plans with varying costs during an open enrollment window, wondering how sick or injured I could afford to get in the coming year. The American system produces an ambient, low-level stress even for those who have so-called good insurance. Canadians should take this moment to appreciate what we have, a health system that binds the social fabric. When everyone gets the same excellent care, equality of all citizens is enshrined. That is a national good, and it's definitely worth protecting. And a few last notes. Elon Musk spent more than $250 million to help elect Donald Trump, according to new federal filings. The world's richest person contributed $239 million to his own America's PAC and $20.5 million to a super PAC named after Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which ran ads claiming that Trump's views on abortion mirrored those of the late liberal Supreme Court justice. That was from the CBS News. More than 500 hospitals have closed their labor and delivery departments since 2010, leaving most rural hospitals and a third of urban hospitals without maternity wards. Those units tend to lose money. Medicaid, which pays hospitals less than private insurance, covers 40% of all births. And running a maternity ward is expensive because specialists are needed for round-the-clock care. The New York Times. Donald Trump's inaugural committee is offering perks to donors giving upwards of $50,000. Those who donate $1 million or raise $2 million can attend events including a cabinet reception with Trump's nominees, a candlelight dinner with Donald and Melania Trump, and a starlight ball on inauguration night. From Axios. More than 77% of Earth's land experienced drier conditions from 1990 to 2020 than in the previous three-decade period, according to a new United Nations report. Dry lands expanded by about 1.66 million square miles, an area nearly a third larger than India during that time. This is Kathy Broughton, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading the week. Thanks for listening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast/info/audio/on-demand. You can hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.